Top stories this hour. Iran reiterates that Israel is an apartheid regime, urging Western states to defend Palestinians' rights instead of denying realities on the regime's crimes. Israeli forces kill another Palestinian youth during an incursion on a holy site near the city of Nablus, near the occupied West Bank. Saudi Arabia sentences a woman to 34 years in prison over her Twitter activities, marking a new milestone in the kingdom's crackdown on social media users. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman has strongly criticized the Western governments for denying the realities that prove Israel is an apartheid regime. Nasser Kanani said official international documents and reports by human rights organizations prove that Israel is an apartheid regime. He added that Israel has been committing genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. Kanani urged the Western states to defend the human rights of Palestinians instead of denying the existing realities on Israel's crimes. His remarks came after Germany and Israel slammed Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas's remarks on the occupying regime's crimes against Palestinians. During a recent visit to Germany, Abbas accused Israel of committing a Holocaust against the Palestinian people. German Chancellor called Abbas's remarks outrageous, with Israeli Prime Minister describing them as a monstrous lie. Iran's foreign minister says the 2015 nuclear deal can be revived if Tehran's red lines are respected. Hossein Amir Abdollahian also said that Iran will take the next step once it is sure about the full economic benefits of the agreement. He added, Tehran has delivered its opinion on a proposal to the other parties, including the United States, through the EU coordinator. The top diplomat pointed out that Iran is awaiting response, which will determine with the timing of a ministerial-level meeting to revive the accord. The US sent the deal into limbo after unilaterally pulling out of it in 2018 and reimposing sanctions on Iran. Remaining signatories have held several talks of rounds in Vienna since April last year. Earlier this month, the EU proposed what it called the final draft to revive the landmark agreement. Iran has submitted its own assessment of the proposal, which the US is currently studying. A year has passed since the United States pulled its troops out of Afghanistan. The chaotic withdrawal is seen as an utter humiliation for Washington after two decades of military presence in the war-torn country. Yusuf Jalali reports from Tehran.
A year ago, the United States marked a chaotic end to 20 years of war in Afghanistan, following a hurried pullout of troops that saw the Taliban reclaiming power in the country. Here in Tehran, Iranian officials and political analysts sat together to discuss different aspects of the incident. They regard Washington's exit as an escape from the Afghan quagmire after it failed to achieve its geostrategic objectives there.
Today, the significance of Afghanistan has not diminished in the eyes of the Americans. They didn't leave the country to let China, Russia, and Iran invest in it. The U.S. had to leave because it totally failed there. But it will continue to make the best of its efforts to destabilize Afghanistan.
Last year, in late August, the U.S. evacuated thousands of troops from Afghanistan in just a few days, following President Joe Biden's order to exit fully by August 30, 2021. The withdrawal marked the end of two decades of war in Afghanistan, which sought to bring peace to the country, but left a trail of chaos and mayhem.
The United States not only did not fight terrorism during its two decades of presence in Afghanistan, but had a role in many acts of terrorism to legitimize and prolong its presence there.
1 year after the U.S. pullout, Afghanistan is still bogged down in turmoil. The country has been the scene of recurrent terrorist attacks, some of which have been claimed by the Daesh terrorist group. Iran says the U.S. has resorted to Daesh to wage a proxy war in Afghanistan to make up for its losses.
The U.S. continues to back terrorists such as Daesh to destabilize Afghanistan. Aside from Daesh, it has been hosting some 7,000 Afghan military forces from the previous Afghan army to train them. What's the goal of such military trainings?
Since the Taliban takeover, Iran has been calling for an all-inclusive government in Afghanistan as the ultimate way out of the persisting instability in the war-torn country.
Experts here describe the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan a lasting shame for America and the worst fiasco after its loss in the 1950s Vietnam War. They say the chaotic exit is also a lesson for the region that wherever Washington has set foot, it has left nothing but mess and destruction for the hosting nations. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
A bomb blast in Afghanistan's capital has claimed the lives of at least 20 people. The explosion took place in a mosque in northern Kabul, where worshippers were holding evening prayers. Over 40 people also have been wounded. A 7-year-old child is among the injured. Investigation into the incident is underway. No group has claimed responsibility as of yet. Supporters of Pakistan's former Prime Minister Imran Khan have taken to the streets in Islamabad to protest against the government and its economic measures. Lawmakers from Pakistan's Tehreek-e-Insaf party were also among the protesters. Nasir Kazmi reports from Islamabad.
Supporters of Pakistan's former Prime Minister Imran Khan and lawmakers from the Tehreek-e-Insaf party held a rally in the capital Islamabad against what they called government's US-backed policies. Since being removed from power through a no-confidence vote in April, Imran Khan has heaped pressure on the country's fragile new coalition government by staging mass rallies demanding fresh elections. Holding responsible Pakistan's coalition government for rising inflation and unrest, the protesters condemned what they called government crackdown on media supporting the former PM's anti-US narrative.
Banning the channel has different modes. Mode number one, their anchors are being harassed to an extent that they have to leave the motherland. Secondly, registration of cases of sedition against those who speak for the freedom of expression and press.
Actually, the imported government is propagating the views and the narrative of Americans in our states. That's why once Shehbaz Sharif said that we are the beggars and beggars are not choosers. Excuse me, we are not beggars. We are independent state.
Some analysts believe Imran Khan has managed to pressurize the government with his anti-US narrative. However, it is estimated that the current political setup will complete its tenure and general elections would be held at a scheduled time.
Imran Khan wants immediate elections as his popularity graph went all-time high in his political career. But if you look into the situation, I think the present government is serious in completing its tenure and trying to gain the public trust.
The government says Imran Khan and his allies want to destabilize Pakistan by creating a chaotic situation, adding it would complete its constitutional term and elections would be held next year. Pakistanis have now a divided view on friendship with the U.S., with some terming it mandatory for the national interest and others calling it an obstacle to the national sovereignty. Whenever the general elections are held, U.S. ties will be a key issue for a political party that will be in power. Nasir Kazmi in Islamabad.
Israeli forces have killed another Palestinian youth. This happened during an attack by the regime's forces on the outskirts of the city of Nablus in the occupied West Bank. The 18-year-old Wasim Nasser Abu Khalifa succumbed to injuries he sustained after being hit by Israeli gunfire at Joseph's Tomb, east of Nablus. This came after Palestinian resistance fighters exchanged fire with Israeli forces during an incursion on the holy site. At least 31 Palestinians were wounded in the ensuing clashes. According to Palestinian media, 3 Palestinians injured by the Israeli live fire are in critical condition. A Saudi court has sentenced a woman to 34 years in prison over her Twitter activities marking the longest jail term ever given to a rights activist. The woman, identified as Salma al-Shahab, has been charged with assisting dissidents who seek to disrupt public order and destabilize civil and national security. She has also been banned from traveling abroad for 34 years. Shahab had frequently tweeted about women's rights in the kingdom. The mother of two children, Shahab is a PhD candidate at Britain's University of Leeds. She was detained in January 2021 when she was visiting home for a vacation. The London-based rights group Al-Ghist has denounced the court ruling, saying it makes a mockery of Saudi Arabia's claims to reform for women and of the legal system. The sentence comes amid a harsh crackdown on rights activists, many of whom have been slapped with jail sentences and travel bans. Shahab's sentence can be appealed within 30 days at the Kingdom's Supreme Court. Out-of-control forest fires have claimed the lives of at least 26 people in Algeria, while injuring dozens in the northern parts of the country. Algerian officials said the fatalities were mostly reported in El Tarf region, near the border with Tunisia. In Saouk Ahras region, more than 40 people suffered burns and at least 350 others fled their homes. No updated toll was given on the number of people injured in the fires in other areas. The gendarmerie was closed and several roads as a result of the fires. Since the start of August, 106 fires have broken out in Algeria, destroying more than 2,500 hectares of woodland. Wednesday's toll brings the total number of people killed in wildfires this summer up to 30. Thousands of Argentinians have taken to the streets in Buenos Aires in protest at surging consumer prices and weakening of the national currency. The protesters demanded government action to boost salaries and unemployment benefits to protest. The protest comes as Argentina's economic crisis has seen the ranks of the poor swell to 40% of the population. The government is also struggling to find solutions to an annual inflation rate that is hovering around 70%. The protesters reached the presidential palace and the Congress after moving through the capital's main avenues and bringing traffic to a standstill. The inflation rate in Argentina rose by 70.4% last month alone, marking the highest monthly rise in two decades. UK inflation has also risen to another 40-year high as spiralling food and energy prices continue to intensify a historic squeeze on households, otherwise known as the cost of living crisis. Said Pureza asked Londoners how they're coping with soaring prices amid a record pay slump.
The sizzling temperatures have cooled off in the UK, but the inflation rate is only heating up. Prices are going up everywhere, as inflation, this time driven by food price hikes, jumps to its highest level since 1982. Coming in at more than 10%. Millions of families across Britain are now trying to make their money stretch, but it's getting harder by the day.
My weekly, my monthly, everything's shop is increasing. I'm shopping right now, whilst I'm at work, to just save time. Because not only is your time money, but we don't really have much of that thing called money.
I am having to budget myself, limit myself, to try and ensure that my wage lasts the whole month, considering I'm having to pay for petrol, bills, rent. It does all add up.
It's harder for me to afford things because, you know, I don't have the steady income like most people do in London.
Economists say the UK is facing a perfect inflation storm caused by a number of factors. Brexit and the delays and disruptions it has caused to the supply chain, the pandemic, and the ongoing Western-backed war in Ukraine.
The UK economy reopened suddenly after COVID, creating bottlenecks at ports compounded by post-Brexit red tape, followed by astronomical energy prices resulting from a decision to wean the UK from Russian energy. Inside the UK, that has translated into higher transport and packaging costs, soaring energy and food prices. That means bills getting more and more expensive in supermarkets, restaurants, and gas stations, feeding the demand for higher pay which adds further to business costs, which turns into even higher prices. And it is that demand for wage increases that's seen multiple public sector strikes in recent weeks. It's a worsening mess that some economists say is in large part the UK government's own doing.
The answer is the war in Ukraine. And you will say, well, is the war in Ukraine going to come to an end? And the answer is no, not if the UK government can help it. You see, Western foreign policy is involved in another debacle.
All this at a time when the UK awaits a new prime minister. Whoever they may be, they have their job cut out for them. Sai Puriza, London.
Well, those were the top stories for this hour. Thanks for joining us.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The human rights situation has gone from bad to worse in the Persian Gulf island state of Bahrain, which is ruled by the repressive Al Khalifa minority regime of pirate origin, says Kayhan International staff writer in an article published under the heading, Have the Al Khalifas reached the end of the road? Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. The human rights situation has gone from bad to worse in the Persian Gulf island state of Bahrain, which is ruled by the repressive Al Khalifa minority regime of pirate origin. Bahrain's long-suppressed majority has seen the alarming erosion of its birthrights, with leading religious and political activists imprisoned, along with hundreds of others, including women and children opposing the dictatorial clique, which is supported by the US and is now a client of the illegal Zionist entity. As a matter of fact, the Zionist regime has tightened its tentacles in Manama by opening an embassy and making the Al Khalifa regime to build a huge synagogue in Bahraini capital for the handful of Jews who are not even of Bahraini extraction. This is while the regime indulges in the sacrilegious behavior of demolishing Husseinian mosques, tearing religious banners depicting the sufferings of the blessed household of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, and even trampling copies of the Noble Quran. Aside from its brazen persecution of the Shia Muslim majority, whose prominent religious leader, Ayatollah Isa Qasim, has been forcibly exiled, the regime is now actively collaborating with the Zionists in Occupy Palestine by assisting Israeli regime troops in the brutal attacks on Sunni Muslim worshippers in the Al-Aqsa Mosque. All this is happening while the so-called advocates of democracy look the other way and feel no inhibitions in praising the butchers ruling Bahrain, such as Britain, the US and France. Even the calls from human rights bodies based in the West are being ignored by the UN and the North American and West European regimes concerning the prominent prisoners of conscience, such as Abdul Jalal al-Senkis, Abdul Hadi al-Khawaja, Hassan Mushaima, Nabil Rajab and Sheikh Ali Salman, leader of the Al-Wefaq party who until his imprisonment headed the elected opposition group in the now dissolved parliament. Some of these prisoners, languishing in the regime's dungeons for more than a decade, are in a critical condition due to torture, hunger strikes and denial of medical treatment. The Al Khalifas seem determined to outdo Saddam of the now defunct Ba'ath minority regime of Baghdad in his reign of terror against Iraq's majority. If they think they can escape the miserable fate of the Ba'athist dictator, who was ironically overthrown by his own American masters, they are in for a rude shock, because the US, which has its 5th Naval Fleet based in Manama, is nobody's friend. The moment Washington feels its interests are imperiled, it has a habit of changing its tracks in order to avert a popular uprising that would bring in power revolutionaries opposed to the Americans and the Zionists. In such a case, crafty Uncle Sam would quickly assemble some pseudo-religious and secular elements in the name of a democratic front to replace the ailing Al Khalifas, who would be whisked away safely to the US along with the hundreds of billions of dollars of the country's stolen oil wealth, which is already stashed in the banks of the US, Britain, and France, and well out of reach of any incoming government. At any rate, the days of the Al Khalifa regime are numbered, and the onus is now on the Islamic revolutionary elements of the Bahraini society to accelerate their movement for ensuring the identity and independence of their nation by thwarting the devilish designs of the Americans.
Food for thought.
Salam, friends, and here is another thought-provoking maxim from the immortal martyr of Karbala, Imam Hussein, peace upon him, the younger grandson of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. He who tries to achieve something by being disobedient to Allah will not achieve what he expects and will fall into what he fears.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z, an introduction into Husseini lifestyle. Today's lesson, the frankness of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. Now, in today's lesson, we're talking about the frankness of Aba Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salam. Among the very special characteristics of the father of the martyrs is frankness in speech and his outspoken nature. Al-Imam Hussein, during his life, he never resorted to uncouth behavior. And he never used deception and fraud and did not make up any deviated path. Rather, he chose the straight path, which was compatible with his living conscience. He avoided every kind of wavering and religion and good manners do not accept. Al-Imam Hussein alayhi salam chose the straight path, which was compatible with his living conscience, avoided every kind of wavering that religion and good manners do not accept. Among the prominent examples of his excellent manners is that when Walid, who was the governor of Medina at the time, summoned him in the dark of the night and informed him about the death of Muawiyah and asked him to pledge allegiance to Yazid, the holy Imam alayhi salam refused. He refused this and he refused and he spoke up clearly explaining his stance. He said, "O Amir, we are the Ahlul Bayt of prophethood and repositories of messengership. The Almighty Allah has initiated creation and will terminate it with us. Yazid is a transgression and a sinner who imbibes alcohol," that means he drinks alcohol, "and a man who sheds blood. He openly resorts to sinful activities. None like me will never pledge allegiance to Yazid." These are the words of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam, saying it directly, frankly, that I am not going to pay allegiance to Yazid. Why? Because he went straight by saying that Yazid was a very bad ruler of the time. Yazid was a sinner. Yazid was drinking alcohol at the time. He shed a lot of blood. He never, not the type of Imam Hussein, will never pay allegiance or pledge to someone like Yazid. So this was show the frankness and the outspoken nature of His Eminence, Al-Imam al-Hussein, and the words demonstrate his strength and determination in the path of truth.
As-salamu alayk, ya Aba Abdullah. Wa ala
arwahi. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. And in today's lesson, we are talking about the frankness of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam. He used to speak frankly. He used to say it directly. He never changed his words. Whenever he felt something should be said, he said it. And one of the main examples was when he said directly to the face of Muawiyah that I am never going to pay my allegiance or my pledge to Yazid. Why? Because Yazid is not a good ruler. Yazid is a bad person. Yazid is drinking alcohol. He's a sinner. He sheds a lot of blood. And he said this directly to them. This shows how frank Al-Imam Hussein alayhi salam was at his time. So among the aspects of his frankness was that it had become a part of his personality, such that when he was leaving for Iraq, he received the news of assassination of his emissary, Muslim bin Aqil. He sent Muslim bin Aqil, who was among his messengers, and Imam Hussein received the news of the assassination of this particular personality. And he's being betrayed by the Kufaitis, the people of Kufa. He told the people who were accompanying him for material gains only, "Our supporters have betrayed us. Thus, anyone among you who desires to go back may do so. No fealty shall remain on his neck." So Imam Hussein was frank and directly faced these people and told them that we've been betrayed. Whoever feels that he desired to go back, he doesn't want to continue with this journey, can go back. I should not lie to him that everything is going to be okay. No, everything is not going to be okay. He should be ready to face a very hard time that is coming in front of us. These particular words, these particular short speeches that Al-Imam Hussein used to give at the time to his people show directly that he was a frank person. He was a frank leader. He was a leader who spoke his word openly, and he never said anything less. Whenever he felt that something should be said, he said it directly in front of the people. He was frank, and this is something that we need to be studying from him. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Until next episode, inshallah. Fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Better friends than you, but anyone stay here won't be alive tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. A deep silence filled the air.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. with the light.
Forestry authorities in southwestern China have opened a new canteen for wild Asian elephants in a bid to stop them wandering into villages. The canteen in Yunnan province provides the animals with attractive and nutritious meals while exploring man-animal harmonious coexistence. During these years, the province has explored multiple ways to reduce the encounters between humans and elephants and try to keep the animals away from farmers' crops. There are now approximately 1,400 hectares of dining halls for elephants, with many expanding from 100 to 240, such as corn, rice and sugarcane. They are planted on a large scale and within easy reach of the elephants. The location of such canteens is extremely selective, usually away from villages and major roads, and the chefs are locals.
Stunning scenes in Spain as the last supermoon of the year illuminates the night sky amid fireworks and fairs marking the start of festivities for a public holiday. In Malaga, fireworks left the sky a mix of colors against the bright moon. There was also a spectacle of drones that lightened the sturgeon moon. Locals in the Canary Islands also celebrated the three-day holiday by lighting up a Ferris wheel as the full moon beamed beautifully in the sky. If the moon is within 10% of its closest distance to Earth at the moment of full moon, it is called a supermoon. The supermoon has various hues and appears bigger and brighter than when the moon is at its farthest point from Earth. Have you ever heard of fighting nature with nature? Well, that's what the San Francisco Metro system in the U.S. did to stop pigeons from overrunning the place. The station has hired a hawk as the new guard to patrol the area. Pac-Man is a 5-year-old Harris's hawk who has taken up the perch at the station. In terms of experience, he is pretty new, as he finished training only 9 months ago. The station recently renovated its building, installing netting and spikes to prevent pigeons from nesting. But these birds still seem to find their way to hang around. So with the Falconer Force, Ricky Ortiz and his hawk were hired this summer to keep the pigeons at bay.
So a typical day is we get here, we make our round, we start off down in the bottom inside the facility, making sure there's no pigeons hanging out in there. And then we work our way up here to the platforms and just check the ledges and the roof and make sure that they're not trying to sneak in on us and keep them out. And he does a pretty good job of that.
The team patrols 3 days a week and Pac-Man is allowed to swoop in and scare any pigeons sitting around. The Falconer says less than half of the pigeons they left after the first week of Pac-Man flying and establishing the territory. Commuters and station managers say they also noticed the difference. The Falconer says he usually keeps his feathery friend happy on the job by giving him snacks throughout the day. This also encourages the hawk not to feast on the pigeons and local rodents.
Technology helps transform the global food production system and mitigates its impact on the environment. China's autonomous region of Tibet is turning barren land into fertile one using greenhouse technology. Once removed, Beinong County is now the largest off-season vegetable supplier in Tibet. The region has taken advantage of its highland conditions to develop a state-of-the-art agricultural structure. Beinong has now more than 2,200 modern vegetable greenhouses and nearly 12,000 hectares of planting area, some built at unimaginable altitude. But one cannot deny the role of railways and highway transport for making this county a hub for organic vegetables. The income of locals has also been significantly improved, and they are now living a happy and prosperous life. If you're a private collector of wild animals, there is good news for you. A Pakistani zoo is auctioning off a dozen lions due to a lack of money to feed them and a space to house them. Lahore Safari Zoo currently has so many big cats that they have to take turns accessing paddocks. Officials say auctioning them will free up space and also reduce expenses. Zoo is currently housing 29 lions. The lions auctioned this week will be between 2 to 5 years of age. Each big cat is estimated to fetch around 150,000 Pakistan rupees. That's not too much, as some zookeepers claim. Even conservationists have expressed anger over auctioning lions to private collectors instead of transferring them to other zoos. Happy news for zoo goers in Nicaragua. Two adorable baby tapirs are born at a country's national zoo south of Managua, adding attractions to the visitors. Two endangered tapirs, a male and a female, were born hours apart at the weekend. In a video shared by the zoo, one of the newborns is seen suckling and walking near her mother. The director of the zoo says the babies are yet to be named but are in perfect health. Tapirs inhabit jungle and forest regions of South and Central America, with one species inhabiting Southeast Asia. They look something like pigs with trunks, but they are actually related to horses and rhinos. Nicaragua launched a project that seeks to conserve this animal in danger of extinction due to hunting and the destruction of natural habitat.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Now we'll take you to mind-riddled French island, Chazoms, which is emerging from the ruins and gradually turning into workers' paradise. Chazombre, close to the port city of Saint-Malo, has an amazing landscape but remains uninhabited as it saw a devastating bombardment by the Allies during the World War II. The Nazi-occupied island was victim of the most bombings per square meter. Known as Martyred and Forbidden Island, it was opened only in 2018 after extensive demining efforts allowed the opening of a marked path. Now, every year, thousands of day trippers make the short boat journey, marveling at the spectacular maritime views and flourishing wildlife there. The safe area still makes up just 3% of the island, but it lets visitors wander between rusty cannons and bunkers. Some workers say they hope the trail will be lengthened to allow a complete tour of the island.
Africa is taking back some of its greatest treasures stolen by the British back in the 19th century. The Horniman Museum in London has agreed to return the artifacts to Nigeria. These are 72 relics, which include 12 highly treasured brass plaques known as the Benin Bronzes. The bronzes are a group of several thousand metal plaques and sculptures that decorated the royal palace of the once mighty kingdom of Benin since the 16th century. These artifacts were looted from a region in modern-day Nigeria in a British military incursion. They later ended up in museums in Europe and the U.S. African countries have been fighting to recover works pillaged by explorers and colonizers as Western institutions grapple with the cultural legacy of colonialism. The Jamtal Glacier in Austria has been losing around 1 meter of its surface annually. Scientists say the ice is a precious archive that is simply melting away and are surveying the area. Austrian mountain researchers say the glaciers contain an invaluable trove of ancient frozen leaves and twigs and other scientific treasures that can be lost forever. They say the time capsules, including the remote Jamtal Valley, are falling victim to climate change. In the 1990s, tourists found that 5,300-year-old mummy of Iceman near the same area. According to the international data, global warming has raised temperatures in Europe's highest mountains by nearly 2 degrees Celsius in the past 120 years. French rescuers are racing against time to save a beluga whale stranded in Seine River near Paris. The beluga was first spotted stuck between two locks in the river from Paris to the English Channel on Tuesday. Specialists say the animal is undernourished and is refusing food. Warm water is also worsening the health of this creature, which is normally seen near Norway, some 3,000 kilometers to the north. Rescuers say they have only up to 48 hours to save the whale. They are now looking at the possibility of taking the beluga out of the water, treating it, and eventually transferring it out to the sea.
There are many big restaurants with Michelin stars awarded based on their quality. But you will be amazed to know that an eatery located in a tiny village in Greenland also has this badge of honor, making it the world's most remote Michelin-starred restaurant. This eatery in the village, which is home to only 53 people, serves you what it gets from its immediate surroundings. Looking out over the chilly North Atlantic, customers taste a variety of local products, ranging from whale skin to an Arctic bird whose entire wing, including feathers, is on the plate. The restaurant is so remote that you can only reach there by boat through floating icebergs. The head chef says he forages for wild berries, flowers, and herbs every day since the menu largely includes local flavors.
Visitors and staff at a French zoo have celebrated the first birthday of twin pandas. The young bears were given a tasty treat of frozen cakes and other treats. As part of the event, five lucky visitors were also given the chance to participate in the celebrations behind the scenes with golden tickets. Other festivities included face painting and panda-themed activities. The baby pandas were born last August and now weigh 23 and 28 kilograms. They live with their mother at Zoo Parc de Bouval, where they have been on display since their arrival in 2021.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Former President Donald J. Trump and his allies have given often conflicting defenses of his retention of classified documents without addressing why he had kept them. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Zolan Kano Youngs and Maggie Haberman. The piece is titled Trump's shifting explanations follow a familiar playbook. First, he said that he was working and cooperating with government agents who he claimed had inappropriately entered his home. Then, when the government revealed that the FBI, during its search, had recovered nearly a dozen sets of documents that were marked classified, he suggested the agents had planted evidence. Finally, his aides claimed he had a standing order to declassify documents that left the Oval Office for his residence, and that some of the material was protected by attorney-client and executive privilege. Those are the ever-shifting explanations that former President Donald J. Trump and his aides have given regarding what FBI agents found last week in a search of his residence at Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, Florida. Donald Trump and his allies have cast the search as a partisan assault, while amplifying conflicting arguments about the handling of sensitive documents and failing to answer a question at the center of the federal investigation. Why was he keeping those documents, some still marked classified, at an unsecured Florida resort when officials had sought for a year to retrieve them? The often contradictory and unsupported defenses perpetuated by Donald Trump and his team since the FBI search follow a familiar playbook of the former president's. He has used it over decades, but most visibly when he was faced with the investigation into whether his campaign in 2016 conspired with Russians and during his first impeachment trial. In both instances, he claimed victimization and mixed some facts with a blizzard of misleading statements or falsehoods. His lawyers denied that he had tied his administration's withholding of vital military aid to Ukraine to Mr. Trump's desire to invest for investigations into Joseph R. Biden Jr. and his son, Hunter Biden. When information contradicting that defense emerged in a forthcoming book by Donald Trump's former national security advisor, John Bolton, Mr. Trump's lawyers switched to insisting that he hadn't connected the aid to the investigations, but that if he had, it wouldn't have been an impeachable offense. Of the multiple investigations Donald Trump currently faces, including a state inquiry in Georgia and two federal grand jury investigations, all related to his efforts to cling on to power at the end of his presidency, as well as civil and criminal inquiries in New York related to his company. The federal investigation into his handling of sensitive documents taken from the White House has emerged as one of the most potentially damaging. A search warrant made public on Friday, 12th of August, revealed federal agents had recovered top-secret documents when they searched Donald Trump's Florida residence earlier in the week as part of an investigation into possible violations of the Espionage Act and other laws. Among the 11 sets of documents taken were some marked as classified, or TSSCI, shorthand for Top Secret Sensitive Compartmented Information. According to an inventory of the materials seized in the search, those types of documents are meant to be viewed only in secure facilities. The inventory of documents included other material, some described as confidential. The stunning revelation made clear the gravity of the Justice Department's inquiry months after the National Archives and Records Administration said it had discovered classified information in documents that Donald Trump had held onto after leaving the White House. "What he doesn't have the right to do is possess the documents. They are not his," Jason R. Barron, a former director of litigation at the National Archives for more than a decade, has said. "There should be no presidential records at Mar-a-Lago, whether they are classified or unclassified, or subject to executive privilege, or subject to attorney-client privilege. documents covered by executive privilege are meant to be kept within the government. A spokesman for Donald Trump did not respond to a message seeking comment. Donald Trump used Hillary Clinton's mishandling of classified material, as seen in the Justice Department investigation into her email practices in 2015 and 2016, as political fodder during his first campaign. He is considering another national campaign for 2024, and questions about whether he mishandled the nation's secrets could be problematic for him, even absent an investigation. After officials with National Archives tried for several months to retrieve material from Donald Trump, he turned over 15 boxes of documents in January. The next month, the National Archives confirmed the discovery of the classified information and referred the matter to the Justice Department. Over the following months, officials came to learn that Donald Trump still had additional material at Mar-a-Lago that some of his advisers urged him to hand over. Mr. Trump described the handover of the 15 boxes as an ordinary and routine process. But administrations have been required to turn over documents to the National Archives before leaving office for more than 40 years, as part of the Presidential Records Act that was created in response to President Richard Nixon's attempt to take his documents and recordings with him after resigning in disgrace. Kash Patel, a former Trump administration official, subsequently justified the handling of the documents by saying that Donald Trump had declassified them before leaving office, a claim echoed by the former president this week. In an appearance on Fox News Channel on Friday night, the right-wing writer John Solomon, one of Donald Trump's representatives for interacting with the National Archives, read a statement from the former president's office asserting Mr. Trump had a standing order during his presidency that documents removed from the Oval Office and taken to his residence were deemed to be declassified the moment he moved them. That claim would not resolve the investigation. Two of the laws referred to in the search warrant executed this week criminalized the taking or concealment of government records, regardless of whether they had anything to do with national security. And laws against taking material with restricted national security information are not dependent on whether the material is technically classified. John Bolton, who served as Donald Trump's third national security adviser over 17 months, said he had never heard of the standing order that Mr. Trump's office claimed to have in place. It is, he said, almost certainly a lie. I was never briefed on any such order, procedure, policy when I came in, John Bolton said, adding that he had never been told of it while he was working there, and had never heard of such a thing after. If he were to say something like that, you would have to memorialize that so that people would know it existed, he said. What's more, he pointed out, secure facilities for viewing sensitive material were constructed at Donald Trump's clubs in Florida and New Jersey, when he often spent weekends as president, meaning that the documents wouldn't need to be declassified. And if they were declassified, John Bolton said, they would be considered subject to public record requests. He continued, when somebody begins to concoct lies like this, it shows a real level of desperation. The claim that the documents held in the Florida residence were declassified